Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. Next Monday, June 21st, a bona fide international celebrity, author, and filmmaker will be in Astoria for a special dinner, film showing, and book signing at Clemente's Restaurant. Bill Carter, on a Northwest book tour for his critically acclaimed Red Summer about salmon fishing in Alaska, will be on hand to show his award-winning film, Miss Sarajevo, whose executive producer was U2's Bono, and to preview his newest demo film for Red Summer. This is going to be a rare event, and if you haven't called Clemente's for reservations for this one-night filmmaker's dinner, I urge you to do so after this program. The opportunity to meet Bill Carter and hear about his incredible adventures throughout the world, right here in our neighborhood, is not to be missed. Today, we're fortunate to have Bill with us by phone, I hope, from Northern California, where before he catches a plane to Seattle and Portland. Are you there, Bill?
I'm here. Thank you very much.
Okay, great. Good. I think we get a little bit of a level up here, and then we're good to go. Well, Bill, we're thrilled that in the midst of all this wonderful Northwest book tour, you're going to Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, Portland, that you are coming to Astoria. And there's a particular reason why you're coming to Astoria. Perhaps we should talk about that first before we go into all the exciting things about your life and what you're doing.
Yeah, you know, when we were putting the book tour together, which, you know, usually hits, you know, larger metropolitan areas, the people at Watershed Communications in Portland said, you know, they kind of mentioned Astoria, and there's a restaurant, and Clemente's, and they said it's a perfect fit, and I thought that's amazing because obviously you have your history in the salmon world is large, you know, it's a large history, and so it made a perfect fit to come there. And then also, it turns out the people that own the restaurant have a tie-in to my first book, Fools Rush In, which, you know, is kind of a look at the Bosnian War. I was in Sarajevo for 2 years, and even though the book takes place in war, it's a very human story and, you know, full of a lot of characters and history and life. So the people there kind of made a perfect fit for telling both stories, and also that people at Clemente's are salmon fishermen for many decades in Bristol Bay, which is where I fish. So it was kind of a perfect fit, and you know, it seemed like the place to go. I'm very happy. I've been there once a long time ago, so I'm excited to go there because I know it's very beautiful.
It is beautiful, and things have really changed in the last decade here. Astoria is experiencing a renaissance. You're right, there is an amazing connection. Lisa Tarabakia Clement hails from a fourth-generation fishing family. And with the Croatian roots. And so that's, of course, perfect with not only showing the film Miss Sarajevo, but then talking about your book Red Summer. And I finished your book, and I just couldn't put it down. I thought it was incredible. And here's a review I just want to read so that people know what Outside Magazine, the New York Times, of course, said it was a terrific book. This is what it says from Outside Magazine said, Bill Carter spent 4 summers slipping on salmon guts as a commercial fisherman in, and could you pronounce the name of the little town, please?
Yeah, it's a little difficult. Ikigik.
Ikigik.
Ikigik. It's very difficult to say.
Ikigik, Alaska. Okay.
Yeah.
And the book he came away with is an honest, refreshingly understated look at a profession that's known for, well, exaggeration. Carter, an Arizona-based journalist, simply gets everything right, from the damaged, broke, drunk fishermen with their carpal tunnel racked arms to the sound of 1,000 fish hitting a net at once. And it just goes on and on, the reviews. Before we, though, talk about Red Summer and then and Miss Sarajevo, which actually came before Red Summer,
yes.
Let's talk a little bit about Bill Carter, your childhood, you know, about your life before these two, you know, events that you, these two, actually, I guess it would be these two amazing things that you've come up with, which are, you know, the books and the film.
Yeah, I was actually born in Northern California, in, you know, Berkeley, and I grew up on a farm, a ranch, about near Chico, about 40 miles north of Chico, California. So Northern California, and it was a produce ranch, you know, peaches and apricots. And then I moved to Chico for high school and whatnot. And so, you know, I grew up in Northern California, and I went to school at UC Santa Cruz, and After college, 5 days later, I was in Asia. I spent 2 years in Asia studying Chinese and traveling the world. And that's when I got back from that journey is when I went to Alaska for the first time to work in a cannery in Naknek. And that kind of got my you know, my taste for Alaska going. And then after that, I had some rather tragic events happen in my life that set me on a course that was a spiraling course downward that put me into a war. And the tragic, I had a fiance who had met in that cannery, and she died. And that sent me really into a two-year grief cycle that, again, I ended up standing on the side of the road at 3 a.m. being picked up by a circus that was going to Sarajevo. And that's how that book begins, Fools Rush In. So, you know, oddly enough, when I wrote Red Summer, these two books, even though they're different, you know, they're geographically extremely different places, there's a bizarre tie-in because I returned to the same place that I met her and I become a fisherman. So it's, there's a tie-in. It's not like, you know, a tie-in that, it's a small tie-in in terms of the books, but it's a big tie-in for me.
One of the other things that I found when I went to your website and I did some reading about you, and just so that folks who are listening get a little bit of the flavor of your life, here's something that was written. It says, in the last 15 years, Carter has traveled to more than 45 countries. He's the director of Miss Sarajevo, the award-winning documentary produced by Bono. He also wrote the theme song for the film. And Carter has written for Rolling Stone, Men's Journal, Gear and Spin magazine on topics such as drug trafficking in Mexico. He investigated the brutal deaths of the Tarahumara Indians by narco traffickers to the streets of Algiers, once listed the most dangerous city in the world. He also wrote a story of his 300-mile journey in 30 days across the Utah desert with no more than a cup, a knife, a compass, and an extra pair of socks. Bill Carter also directed a short documentary on the American icon singer Emmylou Harris. He's made a behind-the-scenes short feature about the legendary cyclist Lance Armstrong. It's just, it's amazing what you've done in your life.
Yeah, you know, you kind of, it's weird. You know, Miss Sarajevo, the film, opened up a lot of, well, I shouldn't say opened up a lot of doors. A lot of people were receptive to me, and then I kind of pushed the door open. I found that's the only way to get things done. And I've been very blessed and lucky to have people, artists, that are very interested in my work, and that kind of, that's how it works for me, is I know the artist and then we work together. And in terms of the other stuff, the kind of more, you know, the articles in Mexico and in Utah, I just, you know, I always want to go where not only am I being tested, I like to be where other people are being tested. And it doesn't have to be dangerous, it just has to be real. And I'm very attracted to that that moment in life when people are tested and what they become, what they you know, because for instance, the war, you know, people became who they are. You can't hide it anymore. And, you know, I think that every day when I walk around, who would be my true friends and who would be people that would give us up? You know what I mean? And fishing also has you get tested in fishing like that. You find out very quickly not only who can handle the work, but who can you trust. And it's something I'm looking for every day. It's just something that I find, I guess, refreshing when I see it. Like, I don't care if someone's bad. I just want to know they're bad, you know, and I don't judge it. I just go, okay, I got it. I know who that person is now, and I make adjustments for it. So, but in terms of the airstrike, it's been a long journey, and it's interesting and fascinating, and I just kind of keep going.
So, Bill, your experience in Sarajevo, after your fiancé died, you wound up being picked up by a circus, going to Sarajevo. You spent how much time there? I know you've been made an honorary citizen of Sarajevo. So your book, Fools Rush In, and the film, Miss Sarajevo, came out of your experience in Sarajevo, and how long were you there?
You know, I was there for quite a while, over a two-year period, which 93 to 95, I was there more than a year, you know, that meaning I was in and out, and I'd go in and out a little bit. But I was there long enough to get very entrenched, as they say, with, you know, I was living like a local person. I was, you know, eating baby food and trying to get my water, which was difficult. And I was making that film and had no electricity and had, you know, there's a lot of games you have to play to make a film. And I had no backing at that time. You know, this whole thing you mentioned about you too, and that came later. At the time, I was just doing it on my own. So, meaning I didn't have any idea if anybody would ever see this footage. or if I would survive to show the footage. But eventually that all kind of worked itself out. But that's 2 years. I was there more than a year in Sarajevo.
This Monday night, the 21st, here at Clemente's, the film will be shown, Miss Sarajevo. There's going to be a four-course salmon dinner. It's a salmon-centric price-fixed dinner with four courses, and then the film, which everyone will be able to watch and discuss. Two films, actually. We're going to get to see Miss Sarajevo, and then there's also another small film, a short film about Red Summer. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's what they call it in the business, a demo, and you know, I was Sundance, the Sundance Channel sent me up there last summer to shoot a demo. So this is 15 minutes. It's almost like a teaser to kind of help the executives understand why you want to have them put real money into the thing and do it more. You know what I mean? So it's a demo. It's not a final. It's only 15 minutes. And
okay.
Miss Syria was actually quite a short documentary as well. So these aren't long affairs.
Okay. And then, but you'll also be, people can meet you, talk with you about both books, Fools Rush In, about your experience in Sarajevo, as well as Red Summer, and then you will sign books and be there for folks about that. My other, I guess, question to you then would be, these events that are being sponsored by Trout Unlimited Alaska. And tell us about your connection with Trout Unlimited Alaska and what's happening with Bristol Bay, the salmon fishing. Obviously, our summer Chinook season is about ready to open here. The Columbia River is very different from Alaska. But let's make some connections here about salmon and what's going on with their habitat and with, you know, in the world from your perspective.
Yeah, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to write Red Summer and then kind of push it is that the salmon fishery in Bristol Bay, which is where I fish, is, you know, one of the most thrilling things I've ever witnessed in my life is to be there in late June and July when they're running 35, 40 million strong. It doesn't really exist anywhere on the planet, and it's an overwhelming feeling that nature still has an upper hand, and it's very exciting. And it's a fishery that is in very good shape, very healthy. It's a sustainable fishery. It's pretty much the number one place that, you know, all like Monterey Bay Aquarium, everybody says, if you're going to eat wild salmon, buy it from Bristol Bay, because it's so healthy. Now, the reason that Trout Unlimited got involved and the reason that I got involved with them is because there's a looming threat in Bristol Bay. And it's not from the fishermen. It's a very well-managed fishery. The fishermen are not threatening that fishery. It's the potential of building one of the world's largest gold and copper mines 14 miles from the headwaters of Lake Iliamna. And Lake Iliamna is the largest lake in Alaska, and basically half of Bristol Bay's salmon, sockeye salmon, are born there, which makes it the largest incubator of sockeye salmon on the planet. So it's a huge threat. Open pit mines, whether you manage them very, very well or whether you manage them very poorly, have large after effects. They have effects like they leak into the watersheds. There's no way to stop it. These are massive open, you know, it's 2 miles wide, 1 mile deep pits. They're going to have three dams the size of Three Gorges Dam in China, 9 billion tons of waste. So if you imagine what's going on right now in the Gulf of Mexico, which was, let's assume that, you know, nobody wanted that oil well to break and spill. It's not in anybody's interest. But it's happening. And really no one knows how to stop it. And if this mine in Alaska has one slip-up, you could actually literally ruin the largest salmon fishery on Earth. And it already makes $200 to $300 million for the local economies. Why screw it up with a mine that's owned by people in London and really doesn't really service the people of the local region? I mean, yeah, there's taxes, but it's not worth the risk of a local economy and a worldwide fishery. So that's one of the reasons I'm really hooked up with Trout Unlimited, and they're trying to help stop it, and a lot of good people are trying to help stop it. It's not really anti-mining. It's anti this mine in this place.
Well, I think that we can draw some parallels. I'd like to talk to you about the what is a sustainable fishery is, but we're halfway through the program. I want to just announce that if you've just tuned in, you are listening to Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn. Today, I have an incredibly interesting guest. My guest is Bill Carter. He is the author of Red Summer, about salmon fishing in Alaska, a book that was critically acclaimed, the New York Times, everywhere. It's been reviewed, and also he is the producer and director of the film Miss Sarajevo, and both the films about Red Summer, a demo, and Miss Sarajevo will be shown at Clemente's on Monday night, the 21st. You'll have an opportunity to meet Bill Carter. They're having a four-course dinner, and they're actually also bringing in some wines from the Montanora Estate, which is one of Oregon's premier biodynamic wineries. So this is an incredible opportunity on Monday the 21st to hear stories about Red Summer, to see these films, and to enjoy salmon. And since we're talking about salmon, Bill, you said that Alaska has the largest sustainable fishery for salmon in the world. And how is that different from the fisheries in the Pacific Northwest or even the Gulf of Mexico?
Well, the Gulf of Mexico didn't have salmon, but the Pacific Northwest, as you all know, especially in Astoria, you have plenty of fishermen there, is that, the Pacific Northwest salmon runs in a little bit of trouble. And why it's in trouble is, runs from dams to potentially what's going on in the Sacramento River affects that run, the rice fields. It's a hard thing to figure out what's going on. But what we know is that it's depleted. And, nobody knows where salmon go. They're a very mysterious fish. Probably the salmon are not dead. They're probably just moved. So you have to be very careful on your coast to allow that fishery to regrow. I mean, to kind of bump. And, sockeye salmon are a three-year cycle, so maybe in a year or two it'll be back up again. I don't know. So I don't think that's yet a sustainable fishery right now. The Gulf of Mexico has a huge fishery, not salmon, but they have lots of other fish. And this oil spill is very likely will decimate it. I don't see how it won't. They're now up saying 60,000 barrels of oil a day. That will probably continue till August. It's astronomical. By the end of it, it'd be 100 Valdezes. So I don't know how these shrimp and other fish will survive that, because oil is, we know what oil is. It's a very thick, and it's not going to let fish go. So they're not going to be able to escape like salmon might be able to escape. So I fear the Gulf might be in serious, serious dire straits, which has a large impact on the rest of our country.
And the salmon fishery in Bristol Bay, when we talked about that, we talked about the fact that the fact that there aren't the dams, and then I would assume and think that the fishermen in Alaska would be very much against the pebble mine, and that there's probably a movement there going on.
There is a movement, but it's an interesting dynamic, and it's one I don't quite understand. I mean, fishermen range all political spectrums, so they've joined forces against the mine for their own self-interest, which is obviously they want to keep fishing. That's a given. What I don't get is that the people who run the fish, meaning the buyers, the people who really run the fishery, are like Trident, Bumblebee, the big players, Peter Pan. They haven't said anything. And I understand there's like a kind of corporate taboo to kind of pick on each other and interfere, because you never know when you don't want another corporation to interfere with you. But at this point, I don't know why they're not against the mine. It doesn't serve them at all to help that mine be there. And I'm kind of hoping that they eventually wake up out of that very, very conservative nature of corporate executives and say, hey, this doesn't help us. Let's help these fishermen against this. And that hasn't happened yet, and that's probably that would be a huge deal. The native populations of the area are about 70-30 or 75-25 against the mine. So there's a lot of people working against it. A lot of people from the lower 48, plus a lot of people in Alaska trying to stop this thing. It's a very, the Bristol Bay has five massive river systems, which includes many more rivers than that, but those are the systems. And like you said, there's no dams. It's totally pristine. you know, the locals have been fishing it for 7,000, 8,000 years since the last ice age. It's been a commercial fishery for 125 years. And, you know, we all know fishermen, especially you in Astoria, fishermen left alone individually will take everything they can. But collectively, they've created a fishery that monitors them in a way that has kept the place safe from many ways themselves. And I think that's an incredible, you know, it's a great example of the, you know, the collective working for the good. And it's really a great example of how it works with fish and game and the fishermen. And it does work.
Bill, I want to kind of get back to your book, Red Summer, though, and I want to talk about the little town that you lived in. And you had an astonishing opportunity to work with Sharon Hart. And she was considered apparently the most respected woman on the water there. And explain a little bit about, because we have just maybe, you know, about 10 minutes left here. And let's talk a little bit about how that experience of fishing came to be and how it changed your life.
Yeah, I was actually back here in Northern California. I just finished my first book, and I was completely broke, and I was trying to just kind of buy some time. And I got a phone call from a good friend of mine, Cindy Rhodes, who actually lives up in Port Townsend area, and she asked me if I wanted to fish for this woman, Sharon Hart. And then Sharon called me within minutes and said, "Hey, if you want to fish, be on a plane at 6 o'clock in the morning. I gotta, you know, I'm gonna use you by midnight." So I said, yeah, we had a bit of a conversation about what it meant, and then I went. And Sharon Hart is one of those people that when I met her, I knew that I'd know her from my rest of my life. She's incredibly powerful human being. She's not always the easiest person to be with on a boat, but she is incredible because she's a woman in a very male-dominated business. She's tough. She knows how to fish, she knows the waters, and she's funny, but she's also doesn't suffer fools and kicks you off the boat if you don't know what you're doing. And I just found her to be an inspiration and a real true character in life. And, you know, she kind of is the reason I kept coming back. And even though every year I said I would never come back because it's a very painful job, we don't have hydraulics on our boat. So you got to pull in 25,000 pounds by hand, which is hard. And I'm glad I went back. I didn't even think about writing a book until the third year of fishing because I was just fishing. And then all of a sudden I realized, wow, this is a place that I needed to write about because the village is amazing. The natives are amazing. These fishermen are very fascinating to me, good or bad. The nature of it all, like the salmon, the bears, the whole thing. It's just an ecosystem that truly is a place that we can call the wild. And but humans are living there, but it's still the wild. You know, the grizzly bear still is the top of the food chain.
Could you please pronounce the village again and explain where that is?
Ikigik.
Ikigik.
Ikigik. It means throat river. And it lies about 375 miles to the east of Anchorage. And it, you know, if you imagine Alaska in your mind, and you see the islands and the chain that goes out toward Russia, that huge tail kite that goes out there. The first part of it is called the Alaskan Peninsula. It's a place that most Alaskans don't ever go to. It's a very remote place. The way you get there is to fly to a place called King Salmon, and then you take a little plane into Ikigik. You know, the little plane, you know, you, the pilot, and you're carrying, like, all the mail. And so it's a very remote village. There's no roads there. There's a store that's open 1 hour a day. There's a liquor store open 1 hour a day. There's no food per se. You couldn't land in Ikigik and survive unless you had inside help.
It's in the Aleutian chain, right?
Well, no, technically it's not. The Aleutian chain starts after Fault Pass, which is until Fault Pass, it's actually technically the Alaskan Peninsula. Then there's a small gap where all the boats from Seattle and Astoria, when they go to fish Bristol Bay, they go through Fault Pass. That is the beginning of the Aleutian chain.
One of the things I loved about your book, aside from the fact that it just these gripping stories and these, you painted a beautiful picture of what it looks like and what the people are like, but now I have a better understanding of when our fishermen here in the Columbia River who are fishing here you know, maybe in the fall, but they are gone in this summer, and they're in Bristol Bay, and so now I have a better understanding of what they're doing there because I've read your book. And we only have just a couple of minutes left here, so again, I want to tell people that Monday night, the 21st, you'll have an opportunity to meet with Bill Carter and to see Miss Sarajevo and to see a demo of Red Summer, and he will also sign books, talk about the books. Is there anything else, Bill, that you would like folks to know, listening people, about your coming to Astoria or about, you know, what you're going to continue to be doing?
Well, I'm writing another book, and I have other projects and documentaries, I'm you know, feature film stuff. So I'm kind of busy with, you know, I also have two young kids, so I'm always busy. One of the things you talked about, your fishermen there in the Columbia River. I just want to reach out to talk to the people who are very concerned about our source of food, and you know, a lot of people, there's a lot of farm fish, farm salmon. And some people think, oh, well, that's the way it's going to have to go because we have to create more food because we're a big planet. And farmed salmon is, if you've paid attention, it's a horrible product. It's full of toxins, and it's not something you want to eat. It doesn't help the fish in the wild because the farmed salmon screw up the wild salmon. So all I'm saying is that eat wild salmon, because wild salmon won't deplete the fishery in Bristol Bay. You'll just pay the fish more money, and that's not a bad thing, because the fishermen have a very tough life to make their nut, if you know what I mean, to cover their cost, and if you eat wild salmon, it helps.
And that's one of the reasons why I know you're coming here, because Lisa Tarabakia Clement and her husband Gordon Clement have a passion for wild salmon, and they are passionate about sustainability. This connection with Croatia, Sarajevo, Yugoslavia, and salmon, it all comes together. So that's
it. Does, yeah. It's actually one of the most exciting events I have planned, because it's rare to have the two things come together in such an incredible way. It's really fantastic.
Well, I am so looking forward to meeting you on Monday night the 21st, and thank you so much for giving us the time to speak with us today on the radio, and I'll see you on Monday night, and I look forward to seeing all of those of you who are listening who can do this. Please call Clemente's after this. I don't think a lot of people really know this is happening, but call and make your reservation to come to the filmmaker's dinner, to see the films, to hear about the books. Bill will sign books. He'll be there. Just a great opportunity here in our little old Astoria, Oregon. Thank you so much, Bill.
You bet. Thank you very much.
And I want to thank Kathleen Morgane, who has been our engineer for today, and Michael Brunn for his original theme music for this program. He's a talented local banjo instructor. Until next week, find a moment for yourself today. Take a deep breath with gratitude for all the good things in your life, and then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, for doing the best you can, and for being here now in this moment on the amazing planet we call Earth.
You've been listening to Talk of Our Towns with your host, Donna Quinn. Talk of Our Towns is heard every Wednesday morning at 9:30. It will be repeated on KCPB 90.9 FM at 8:30 tonight. If you came in late to the program, you can hear it all from our website, coastradio.org. Click on the Listen button and then the On Demand button located at the top of the site. You can hear any of our locally produced public affairs shows, plus get links to the websites of guests and organizations featured on the shows, plus get information about our program schedule. And that's all at coastradio.org. Right now, you're listening to Coast Community Radio, 91.9 KMUN in Astoria and 89.5 KTCB in Tillamook. As Elizabeth Menetre will be up next after BBC News headlines for 2 hours of folk music on International Harvest. The Northwest and Senior Disability Services is offering a free series, Powerful Tools for Caregivers class, and that starts June 24th at the NWSDS office at 2002 Southeast Chokeberry Avenue in Warrenton. It runs from 2 to 4 in the afternoon on Thursdays for 6 weeks, beginning on June 24th. Class size is limited and pre-registration is required. The forecast for Astoria and the coast, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain this morning, another chance of showers this afternoon, chance of precipitation overall today is 40%. The highs today will be around 60 degrees. This is Coast Community Radio. The time is...